What o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call the March 29th, 2022 minutes of the House Taxes Committee to order under rules 10.01 dealing with remote hearings. Also to those viewing, if you'd like to get the materials that we are working from here in the committee, go to the website, Minnesota House of Representatives. Then go to committees and divisions, and then go to taxes. And on the right-hand side on that home page, scroll down, is the information you will need. So with that, Ms. Griska, please take the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lislegard.
Representative Lislegard present.
Representative Lislegard present. Representative Davids.
Davids present.
Representative Davids present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson's present.
Representative Carlson present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr.
Her present.
Representative Her present. Representative Hertas. Representative Howard.
Howard present.
Representative Howard present. Representative McDonald.
Present.
Representative McDonald present. Representative Miller. Representative Moran.
Present.
Representative Moran present. Representative Mortensen. Excused. Representative Robbins. Representative Sandell.
Sandell present.
Representative Sandell present. Representative Schultz.
Schultz present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson. Representative Swazinski.
Swazinski present.
Representative Swazinski present. Representative Joachim.
Joachim present.
Representative Joachim present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. Next, we're going to approve the minutes. Representative McDonald, have you had a chance to review the March 24th minutes? And would you like to move those for approval?
As a matter of fact, Mr. Chair, I have, and therefore I move those for approval.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative McDonald moves approval of the March 24th minutes. Any discussion, thoughts, changes? All right. With that, if you would temporarily unmute yourself, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The March 24th, 2022 minutes of the House Taxes Committee are approved. Very good. So the first bill we have up is House File 2367. And I see we have Chair Hornstein here. Welcome, Chair Hornstein, to the committee. I will call on you in just a second, but I'd like someone to move House File 2367.
To move, Chair.
Chair Joachim moves House File 2367 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Chair Hornstein, welcome to the committee. Thanks for being here. You have been here at least once, maybe twice every year. So you're a frequent visitor, actually, which is very, very good. So tell us about House File 2367.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. I'm very proud to present House File 2367. This is a very important bill related to our recycling programs throughout the state, recycling and composting, and it relates to the SCORE program. SCORE stands for the Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment. And this is a program that gives grants to counties to help fund programs for waste reduction and recycling. But SCORE funds have not kept pace with pollution prevention needs. And while counties are required to provide a 25% match for SCORE, they often end up providing 100 to 400% match or more. And so what this bill does is addresses this shortfall by providing more dollars for recycling to counties to protect our land, water, and air quality. And it does this by shifting the monies that are that have been collected that go to the general fund directly into the SCORE program. This has been supported very strongly by counties and others involved in waste management and waste reduction recycling. And I would like to, Mr. Chair, have them give you some brief comments and testimony. I know our time is very limited. That's why I wanted to keep my introductory comments brief, Mr. Chair.
Area. Thank you very much, Chair Hornstein. And before we go to the testifiers, I would like to go over the revenue estimate. And there is a shift, as he mentioned. And so the general fund cost would be in fiscal year 23, $15.0 million. And then in 24 and 25, in each of those years, it would be at $32 million. And Chair Hornstein, so we're not increasing any solid waste management tax. It's just shifting from one area to the next. Is that correct, Chair?
Correct, Mr. Chair. And I think it really bears repeating that this money was collected for this purpose. And so we are simply reassigning, reshifting this money for the very purpose it was originally appropriated for. So it is really correcting, I think, a kind of a historical wrong in the way that this program has been funded.
Very good. Thank you. So we have some testifiers. The first up is Commissioner Tom Patzer. Welcome to the committee. If you would introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Todd Patzer. I'm a Lac-La-Parle County Commissioner and the President of the Association of Minnesota Counties. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 2367. My comments today and those of my colleague, Commissioner Mogino, are offered on behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Intercounty Association, the Solid Waste Administrators, and the Partnership on Waste and Energy. Together, we've developed a coalition of support for this effort. But I'll start briefly with the origins of the solid waste management tax. As counties, we make sure that solid waste, or just plain trash, is properly handled. It's a core function of government. What began with regulations in cities about the location of a city dump or open burning has evolved into a system that is as complex and varied as the materials that are being thrown away. Today, the Minnesota Waste Management Act reduces risk to public health and to the environment by establishing a hierarchy of directing counties on how waste should be managed. The law also has measures to ensure the safety of people that work with waste and to address the risks of landfills. Through 2015, the state has spent over $430 million cleaning up landfills, and over $300 million more is needed through 2050. That's dollars that we all pay through taxes and insurance costs, a financial burden that will never go away. In 1988, in the face of mounting trash, litter, and illegal dumping problems, the governor created a task force called the Select Committee on Recycling and the Environment, or SCORE, as you heard. That committee recommended a tax based on the cost of trash, resulting in the solid waste management tax to help fund recycling-related programs. This tax applies to all trash services, 9.75% for residential and 17% for businesses. It's a user tax that generates about $100 million a year, with 30% or about $30 million going to the general fund where it isn't used for waste management purposes. House File 2367 will help counties recover SCORE funding from the general fund to better protect public health and environment as originally intended. While solid waste management is carried out by a network of public and private entities, the state holds only counties responsible for meeting the mandates. Despite this, less than 20% of solid waste management tax revenues are allocated to SCORE grants to fund recycling and reuse programs. Most of the costs of achieving state requirements are paid by local government. In my county, for example, at Lacapara, we have to subsidize our score grant amount with annual special assessments on residents and businesses. And most of that funding goes to our recycling programs. We provide curbside pickup for city residents, multiple rural pickup sites. We host semi-annual household hazardous waste collections. As county commissioners, we quite often volunteer at those collections. And I'm always amazed at the huge quantities of chemicals and other dangerous materials that just keep coming in at every event. And with increased funding towards our solid waste management programs, we could expand these efforts and divert more of these materials in an appropriate way. And with that, I will turn things over to Commissioner Mojo, who will tell you more about this proposal.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you very much. Next up is Commissioner Jenny Mojo from my home county of Clay. Commissioner Mojo, great to have you here, and thank you, and introduce yourself, begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jenny Mojo. I am a Clay County Commissioner, and along with my colleague, Lacapara Commissioner Patzer, we're excited to be here today to talk about our perspectives and how we would encourage you to support House File 2367. The graph presented shows how counties in Minnesota have continually stepped forward to fund programs required by the state. While the state's contribution has essentially remained steady, this slide underestimates the local effort because it doesn't show the additional costs paid by cities for recycling-related services. Counties have had to piece together many other tools to fund recycling and reuse mandates due to inadequate score grant allocations. Some have developed partnerships to pool resources through a solid waste management organization. Counties may use a solid waste tax assessment, landfill fees, service charges, and revenue from material sales, and even property tax revenue to ensure responsible management of our waste. Counties are doing our best to make it work, but costs are continuing to increase and our funding is falling short of the need. Recycling and reuse programs run by counties have been successful, but more can and must be done. In 2019, Minnesota counties diverted 2.5 million tons of waste to recycling and organic programs. An additional estimated 1.1 million tons of solid waste has been reduced. This means greenhouse gas emissions are reduced as materials are sourced to reuse, recycle, and keep out of our landfills. In Clay County, SCORE funding covers less than a quarter of the county recycling budget. Waste reduction, reuse, and recycling programs are being subsidized by fees at our county landfill. Part of the county recycling budget is for reimbursing the cities for their recycling expenses. Currently, we're not able to reimburse city programs for even the most basic of services, and our smallest cities, including the chair's hometown of Dilworth, cannot afford to offer robust services. Increasing recycling is what we're trying to do to meet the state goals, and it's very difficult when our services cannot be expanded or improved. The resources we currently have are not adequate to meet the state goals to reduce, reuse, and recycle more waste. We are losing out on opportunities because of limited resources. Additional SCORE dollars are needed to meet the ever-needing unmet waste challenges. Passage of House File 2367 to increase SCORE is truly an investment in Minnesota, all of Minnesota. The recycling industry employs 37,000 Minnesotans and has an estimated $15.7 billion with a B dollar economic input impact. We are approaching 6 million tons of trash generated in our state annually, and now is the time to help us move closer to our goal of zero waste. Counties in Minnesota respectfully request that the legislature pass House File 2367 to restore funding for recycling to counties and to use the solid waste management tax for the ever-increasing solid waste management challenges. Thank you to you, and we stand for any questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Mojo. Just for talking about legislative history, Commissioner Mojo's grandfather was Merlin Ballin, who served from 1978 to 1986, I believe, in the Minnesota House of Representatives. Thank you for being here. Next, we have Doug Carnival, and I'll ask testifiers to stay on in case there's questions for you later here. So, Mr. Carnival, please introduce yourself. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Doug Carnival. I'm here today representing the Minnesota chapter of the National Waste and Recycling Association. That's an association of private sector waste haulers, recyclers, and waste processing facilities. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on House File 2367. We appreciate the efforts of Representative Hornstein to capture additional solid waste revenue that is currently sent to the general fund, and our association has long held a belief, as stated in statute, that solid waste tax revenue should be used for solid waste tax purposes. We fully support greater diversion of recycling materials, including organics, from the waste stream. To that end, we have always supported increasing SCORE grants to counties to provide more resources for reducing waste and recycling more materials from the waste stream. We support legislation that fairly and equitably distributes additional solid waste tax revenue to the counties for recycling purposes. Thank you for your opportunity today, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. First of all, is there anyone else that is on the virtual meeting that would like to testify on House File 2367? Seeing none. So, Mr. Carnival, you might be the best one here, maybe, and I'm looking back in history. So this, when did this start, like 1997, or when did this funding begin where that you had this solid waste management tax? What's the history, and how much went into the general fund versus the environmental fund here? How's that changed over time?
Mr. Chair, if I remember correctly, I think the entire amount went into the solid waste fund for solid waste purposes. And along the way, and I can't remember the year, there was some diversion of that fund to the general fund. As you know, occasionally when we have shortfalls, there's some raiding that happens of some of these funds. And that's my recollection.
Representative Hornstein, Mr. Carnival, I am shocked and dismayed you would say something like our legislature doing something like that.
Redirecting, perhaps, is a better word.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that might have happened. Yes. So, okay. Yeah, I'm looking here. Prior to the comparable numbers, about 50% prior to 2005, and had been in place since the law's inception in 97. So it looks like there's, and now, right now it's, what, 80?
70-30, I think.
70-30. Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Carter. Any other questions for the testifiers at this time before I go to questions for the author of the bill or others? I don't see any. Chair Hornstein, any final thoughts?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think our testifiers said it very well. And again, this is, we're not adding any new taxation or revenue. We're simply moving this money that was originally, its original intent and purpose was to go to the SCORE program. And as you can see from what the county commissioners and others have said and have been telling us for many years, that this will make a huge difference in increasing our recycling and organics composting in the state. And again, it is money that the original intention was to go to this purpose. And I can think of no better time when we're really facing climate challenges. We have a record surplus. There is no better time to do this. It's something we've worked on for years. I want to make 2022 the year we finally get this done, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Chair Hornstein, so if we were able to, if we shifted more money into this environmental fund, then more would get out to the counties to deal with this specifically. Is that maybe whoever wanted to? Okay,
Chair Hornstein. Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair and members, absolutely correct. That is the sole purpose of doing this. And, you know, we have as a legislature, charged the counties with this task. And so it's only appropriate that this money be sent to the counties, again, for the very specific purpose of waste reduction, recycling, and organics composting. That's what this money is intended for. That's what it'll be used for. And of course, it's more than just counties that will benefit. We heard the multiplier effect that these funds provide in employment and environmental protection, in just general livability for our citizens. So I think this is just a win-win all around, and I ask the committee for their support.
And thank you, Chair Hornstein. It looks to me like every percent you're moving from 70% is about about $1 million, it looks to be. So 15% to 85 takes it 15 million and shift. And so it looks like, so Chair Hornstein, it looks to me like this is scalable. Is that right? I mean, could
yeah,
this be
I mean,
scalable?
I think we can implement.
As chairs, you're always looking at a target and what you can fit in so forth. But it looks like it could be. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, correct. I think we can implement this over time. Of course, Representative Eklund added an amendment in the Environment Committee where we could it would allow us to accelerate this process. But yes, I believe it can be scalable, and we just really need to get this going now.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Chair Hornstein. Appreciate that very much. And testifiers, thank you. Very good information. With that, Chair Joaquin, at that, the chair will lay over House File 2367. So thank you very much, Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Next up on the agenda is House File 3167. That is Representative Cagle's bill. Who would like to move that?
I will, Mr. Chair.
Chair Joaquin moves House File 3167 for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Representative Cagle, welcome to the committee, and please state your name, and we're going to put on an amendment in just a second, but if you want to introduce yourself for the committee, and then we will do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Cagle, House File 3167 is the amateur sports account, so it would allow for the National Sports Center, which is a state asset, to collect the sales tax and use for operating. And I know I have testifiers.
Very good. We'll go to that. And you do not have an amendment on this bill. That's the next bill. So I'm sorry about that. So with that, we'll go to testifiers. So it looks like, okay. We've got to back up here. So Chair Joaquin, this bill has to go to state government. So would you like to withdraw your earlier motion and move this bill to be referred to state government?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my earlier motion and move this bill before this committee to be sent to state government.
Very good. So House File 3167, the motion by Chair Joaquin is to refer this to state government. All right, now we're all set. So with that, I see Todd Johnson is here.
Chair.
And so welcome to the committee. If you would please introduce yourself and please begin.
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Todd Johnson. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. Appreciate the opportunity to present real quickly. I know you're under a time crunch here. And I just wanted to make sure that most people are familiar with this facility and how it runs and how it was contemplated. There's actually in statute now 297 sub 15, an exemption that exists for this facility that is not being used because of just the wording in that language, Mr. Chair. But this bill contemplates a fund being set up more attuned to what the revenue department is doing these days. So either way, we would be happy to use the funds. As you know, this is a very unique facility up here. And if imitation is the purest form of flattery, I think those of you with kids or grandkids have seen these facilities come up all over the country right now. One was just built for $220 million in Mesa, Arizona, and others around that we are now competing with. This facility has two, the Minnesota Sports Commission and subsequently the National Sports Center has two real missions. One is to help build amateur sports facilities for the citizens of the state. And second is to capitalize on this burgeoning area of sports tourism. And I believe we do both of those things in spades. Many of you have received grants for Mighty Ducks grants or Mighty Kicks grants in your community. Those run through our commission. And then secondly, the revenue side on the economic development is sort of speaks for itself. It's been nearly $1 billion since over the 30 years of this facility that has come in directly due to it. It's roughly, what's the annual amount is roughly about $90 million a year just from the sports facility. $35 million of that is from one event that we run called USA Cup. However, the facility is now 30 years old, and according to the state's deferred maintenance, we're going through the bonding cycle to try to get some of that taken care of, but it's nearly $70 million behind in deferred maintenance. That's nothing fancy other than sprinklers and ice for 8 sheets of ice, those sorts of things that need to be fixed up. So we do not receive any operating money at all from the state of Minnesota. So what we would be using this money for is certainly not overhead or anything of that nature, go right back into the facility. And if I needed to somehow assure that would happen, I'd be happy to do it. But it would be money that would be put right back into the facility to upgrade the National Sports Center in Blaine.
Very good. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. And the revenue estimate would be, you would be moving from the general fund to the special revenue fund. So the cost of the general fund would be $290,000 in 2023. And in 24 and 25, it would be $320,000 in each of those years. Members, we do something like this with the Minnesota State High School League, where they, in fact, I've got a bill up later this week that extends this till I think 2030 of the high school league. But they're able to use the sales tax that they get off their tournaments and stuff like that to go back into youth sports and helping schools with transportation, other things dealing with students and extracurricular activities. So it is something that is done in other areas. With that, members, any questions? Well, anyone else that would like to testify on House File 3167? Don't see any, so I'm going to call on Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a general question. So is this only going to be for the Blaine location for the amateur sports group? Because I know you have other locations across the state that you're essentially kind of partners with or whatever. Would this apply to any of those other locations or just to you?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swedzinski, yes, it would be just for this facility up here. This is the one that the state of Minnesota owns. The other ones we did help, and I'm sure referring to one in your district, we did help using our bonding as the vehicle for that bonding, but that was state money that went into those. It wasn't direct grant from this facility.
Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you. So this is done, Mr. Chair, this sounds like this has been done a couple other places. And the Blaine facility is owned 100% by the state of Minnesota. So it's not city owned, not locally owned. Why would they charge sales tax to begin with for an event?
That is a great question. Does anyone from House Research want to answer that one? Mr. Klayman.
Yep, Mr. Chair and members, I was just looking at that. I had the same question. You know, I believe it would be because there's not a specific sales tax exemption for those sales that are done by the state-owned facility. There is an exemption in for sales by a sports center that has been designated by the Amateur Sports Commission to conduct athletic events. And that's the one that does not apply. So that is in the sales tax chapter. On the first question, that's my, you know, initial question right now. But to be sure, I have to go back and look at the sales tax statutes and see exactly what might be going on.
Very good. Thanks, Mr. Kleeman. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, to me, this seems like, you know, you want to charge sales taxes on a ticket that you sell and then keep the money. Why not just get rid of the sales tax and just they charge more? To me, that would, I don't know, other than running it through a different organization or the state, it seems like we could simplify this rather than come to the legislature on this behalf, but just get rid of the sales taxes on these, you know, ticket sales, and then let the organization themselves just keep the revenue.
Very good. I think we will certainly need to take a look at that a little further on what the statute says. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Representative Swazinski. So I'd also like to mention Representative Hertaus is now in attendance. Any other questions? Representative Cagle, closing thoughts.
Thank you so much for hearing the bill, Mr. Chair. And if you haven't been up to the Sports Center during USA Cup, hoping that haven't heard any, the fact that it's not happening this year. So I'm hoping it is. And get up there and attend some of the soccer games. They're really fun. So thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you so much, Representative Cagle. And with that, members, we need to take a roll call. And the motion by Terry O'Akim is to refer House File 3167 to the State Government Committee. And so, Ms. Griska, please take the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt, aye.
Representative Marquardt, aye. Representative Lislegard.
Representative Lislegard, aye.
Representative Lislegard, aye. Representative Davids.
Davids, aye.
Representative Davids, aye. Representative Agbaje.
Aye.
Representative Agbaje, aye. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Representative Carlson, aye. Representative Detmer.
Detmer, aye.
Representative Detmer, aye. Representative Garofalo. Representative Gomez.
Gomez, no.
Representative Gomez, no. Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Herr, aye. Representative Hertaus.
Hertaus, aye.
Representative Hertaus, aye. Representative Howard.
Howard, aye.
Representative Howard, aye. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, aye.
Representative McDonald, aye. Representative Miller. Representative Moran.
Aye.
Representative Moran, aye. Representative Mortensen, excused. Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell.
Sandell, aye.
Representative Sandell, aye. Representative Schultz.
Schultz, aye.
Representative Schultz, aye. Representative Stevenson. Representative Swazinski.
Sure, aye.
Representative Swazinski, aye. Representative Joachim.
Aye.
Representative Joachim, aye. Let's see. Representative Garofalo.
Ms. Griska, is that everyone that, unless those were unexcused, if you could go by at least one more time just to.
Yeah, Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo votes yes.
Representative Garofalo is aye. We have 17 ayes and one no.
Thank you, Ms. Griska. There being 17 ayes and one nay, the motion does prevail. House File 3167 is off to the State Government Committee. So thank you, Representative Cagle. Next up, we have House File 3320, Representative Acum. And Representative Acum, there you are. Welcome to the committee. Would someone like to move to lay over House File 3320?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lessigard moves to lay over House File 3320 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. And there is an A1 amendment. So, Representative Lessigard, you want to move the A1 amendment?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Very good. So at this point, Representative Acum, welcome to the committee. And if you want to talk about the author's amendment, or is it just to put it in the form that you would like us to allow you to discuss the bill?
Well, it changes it just a little bit. And so, Mr. Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. What the amendment does is to allow us to include owner-occupied duplexes and triplexes. And also to have more than one expenditure of the same type. And that might make sense maybe after we talk about the bill. So that's what the amendment is about, sir.
Very good. So I think it's always best maybe put this amendment on, then you can talk to the entire bill. It's going to be laid over. So I'd like to take a vote on the A1 amendment to House File 3320. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Acum to House File 3320 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I wrote this bill because we are seeing our climate changing before our very eyes. This is no longer an issue that may affect us at some point in the future. It's happening now. And it's happening because of human behaviors causing increased greenhouse gas emissions. The impacts that we are seeing in Minnesota are warmer temperatures and more frequent extreme weather events that are having costly impacts on our state, both economically and socially. Last year alone, we saw widespread droughts that impacted our agriculture sector statewide. We saw devastating tornadoes in Minnesota in December for the first time. And from a public health perspective, we are seeing an increased occurrence of asthma, especially along highly traveled transportation corridors. While House File 3320 will not fix our climate crisis, it is intended to be one strategy that will move us in the right direction. House File 3320 is a refundable tax credit for three different types of expenditures. The first is a group of appliances. Second is energy efficiency measures. And then third is a category of large improvements. And again, these are for owner-occupied dwellings. Mr. Chair, I have two testifiers that are here to provide testimony today.
Very good. Thank you very much, Representative Acum. So we've got Jamie Fitzke and Lee on deck, Lee Ballincourt. So Jamie Fitzke, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Chair Markert and members of the Tax Committee. I'm Jamie Fitzke, Director of Legislative Affairs at the Center for Energy and Environment, and I'm testifying in support of House File 3320. The Center for Energy and Environment, or better known as CEE, is a Twin Cities-based nonprofit with over 40 years of energy efficiency experience in research and development, education, program development, implementation, and policy. CEE supports policies that advance energy efficiency and foster innovative technology development and deployment to help Minnesotans save energy and money, reduce carbon emissions, and create high-quality jobs. I'd like to thank Representative Acum for authoring this bill. House File 3320 creates a sensibly structured tax credit for installing highly efficient technologies, like an air source heat pump, which looks like a standard air conditioner, but can heat and cool a home, heat pump water heaters, and insulation, all of which improves a home's energy efficiency and immediately helps residents save energy, reduce their utility bills, and make their homes more comfortable. Personally, a number of years back, my husband and I bought our first home. We moved in during the winter and couldn't get over how cold our attached garage was, and that cold seemed to spill over to the adjoining rooms. So we popped our heads into the attic and realized that there was no insulation in the garage ceiling. And as I'm sure many of you can relate, as new homeowners, there were many ways that we wanted to improve our new home, but had limited budget. So we talked to our residential energy efficiency expert and did some research online and found that at that time, there was a federal tax incentive for insulation. So knowing that we'd recoup some of those material costs through the tax incentive, it helped us to prioritize installing that insulation. It was one of our first home projects that spring and made a noticeable difference in our house and the garage the following winter. So since that time, that federal tax credit has since expired, but I hope my experience highlights how impactful and beneficial a Minnesota tax incentive could be. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and ask members to support this bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. Fitzke. Next, Lee Valancourt, please state your name and welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Lee Valancourt. I am the owner of Design Right Energy, LLC. I'm located in Plymouth, Minnesota. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to join you today to provide testimony in support of House File 3320. As an entrepreneur and a small business owner, my work is focused on providing professional energy consulting services for homes and businesses located here in Minnesota. I've been in the energy industry trenches, so to speak, for over 20 years, helping identify and deliver cost-effective energy solutions for all kinds of customers. My clients are looking for ways to save energy and save money. They're also increasingly interested in how they can be responsible stewards of our environment by minimizing their impact through energy generation and reduced consumption. I'd like to thank Representative Akam for her authorship of House File 3320. Given the myriad of uncertainties that are impacting our lives, economy, pocketbooks, every day, ranging from impacts of the pandemic, hopeful economic recovery, and the events unfolding in the Ukraine, this bill is not only timely, it's important. House File 3320 will help Minnesotans access and improve ways that they can control their energy use and costs with energy efficiency and innovative solutions now and in the future. Due to the inaction at the federal level, tax cuts for residential energy efficiency have expired and are unavailable to those who are making improvements to their property. This bill is thoughtful and modest approach takes a meaningful action right here at home to assist the everyday Minnesotan with investments they are making or contemplating to improve their properties with the modern energy efficient technologies. In closing, House File 3320 provides a common sense approach that helps Minnesotans access innovative energy solutions that will deliver increased comfort and provide individuals with more control over their energy use and cost. This bill is good for Minnesota energy consumers, and it helps support the local energy jobs and businesses like mine. I respectfully ask for your support to pass House File 3320. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else on the virtual meeting that would like to testify on House File 3320 as amended? If not, before I call on Mr. Klayman to kind of go over the maximum credit amount and kind of the income limits, I want to read the revenue estimate for House File 3320 as amended. So for fiscal year 2023, it'd be 37.5 million, and then for 24, 43.6 million, and for 2025, 50.3 million. So, Mr. Klayman, can you give us a few details on kind of generally what the limits are and credits and income limits and so forth? Mr. Klayman.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. The maximum credit under the bill would be $2,000. And to get to the $2,000, you'd have to have expenditures from at least two of three different categories. And the maximum in each category would be $1,000. And so you just take the sum of your expenditures from the categories under the limits for each category. And then the maximum from that would be $2,000. As far as the income limits, the amendment actually changes the limits in the underlying bill. So the credit would phase out for $1 for every $30 of income for married filers of $150,000. And then for all other filers, it would be $75,000. And in the underlying bill, that would be subdivision 22. It's line 4.22. That's where the phase out is. So it's, again, $150,000 for married and then $75,000 for all other filers.
Mr. Klayman, thank you so much. Appreciate that. So we'll go to questions to the author or the testifiers. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it just would be a question to the last business owner that kind of came before the committee. Sir, just was asking, how are you doing when it comes to getting talent, electricians and people to come in to your business? Are you having a difficult time getting talent, I should say?
Mr. Valancourt. Mr. Valancourt, you're muted.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman. Representative, I'm having trouble, just like everybody else, finding qualified personnel to get this to get the projects, you know, up and running and getting it done at a reasonable price. With the shortage of labor, everybody, they can kind of command whatever price they want. And if you're in a situation where you've got a failure somewhere, you're kind of, you know, at the dog's door. You've got to pay whatever price it takes to get it done. So yes, there is a shortage of qualified labor for many industries, not just my own.
Representative Swazinski.
And then thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Valancourt, would you say that you have currently, you know, so currently I believe there's not a tax credit for the things you put in. You currently have a shortage of work putting the products that you put in to homes?
Well, not a shortage of work.
Mr. Valancourt.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Not so much a shortage of work as it's being addressed more on a more urgent level. Like I said, people are putting off some of these expenditures because they're, you know, just the dollars it takes to get some of the work done. So it's being done more as on an ad needed basis versus, you know, they're basically putting off what they can put off until, you know, it's absolutely necessary to address an issue.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you. So essentially, you know, the tax credit would get them to replace a furnace that maybe doesn't need replacing quicker. Is that kind of what you're saying, sir?
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, absolutely. If they can limp it along, or if they're contemplating, you know, making an upgrade in their home and the heating and cooling plant is part of those upgrades, yeah, they're going to put that part off until they either decide to make the jump and do whatever remodeling they're looking at doing, or, you know, they wait till they have a catastrophic issue to make the investment.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you feel like anyone has not done the work that they needed to do because this tax credit doesn't exist?
Mr. Valancourt.
Mr. Chairman and representatives, they're going to hold off as long as possible if they know that there's a tax credit that is possibly on the horizon. They're going to hold off making that expenditure until they can take advantage of, you know, whatever opportunities are made available to them.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And reading through this bill, I am having some concern about how much this is really going to hurt the poor and help the rich. And I have some problems with that. Aren't too many low-income people buying electric cars? Most of the people that are going to benefit from this are the very, very wealthy. And so I'm a little confused about where we're going with this. And then you've got the junk science of climate change thrown in here. And I just think we better think about what we're doing here, especially with these big tax breaks for the wealthiest among us, is quite concerning to me, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Acom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will say we very thoughtfully went through and added things to be a part of this bill that all income levels could manage. And so there are things from smart thermostats, which are really quite affordable and very effective at helping with energy efficiency. It's at whatever level of weatherization a homeowner may be able to afford. And so by no means is this excluding lower income wage earners. And so I appreciate the thoughts, but that's not what's the reality. And just to say about the climate change, the scientists will certainly speak different to your opinions there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's a lot of scientists that realize it is junk science. It's the biggest fraud among us here, and we need to at some time address that, why we're hurting the poor, making everything so regressive because of the fraud of climate change. And there's plenty of scientists that believe that.
So, Representative Acom, I'll give you the last word, but this is not the Energy Committee. We're not going to be debating climate change, pro or con, but I will give you a response here, and then we're going to move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the representative statements spoke for themselves. We can move on.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the author. See, you probably notice I have my jacket on. I'm in an old 100-year-old building here in Delano, where my studio is, and I have 15-foot ceiling. And so we keep our heat down a lot. It's at 62 degrees right now. My digital editor doesn't like it much, but we have a little floor heater. So we keep our heat down. And at the house, even though I have a debate with my Mrs. McDonald, I keep the heat down there too, especially at night. We just got to dress warm because the cost of energy is going up rapidly and there's limited dollars available. And I'm doing my part to keep the our prices down. Certainly, but your bill has nowhere in it at all that allows for a current household without having to spend more money. We're trying to hold on to these precious dollars in this very tumultuous time with a 40-year high of cost of gas and everything. So why in your bill you have nothing for those folks who are responsible or trying to be responsible in keeping their energy costs down? Why is there no tax credit for those, only those who have to spend money? Just out of curiosity, what your thoughts are on that?
Representative Acom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think there are other programs that can address exactly what you're talking about. We have a weatherization bill that's actually working through its way through the legislative session that will put more money towards conservation improvements that will help exactly what you're saying. My bill isn't intended to fix all of the issues that are coming with climate change. It's one tool, it's one strategy to help address this really important issue. And so I appreciate that you keep your energy down, and I appreciate that. And so thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Elkin, would you be amiable to an amendment of some sort to allow for credit for those folks that keep their energy down at night and dress warmer?
Representative Acom.
Well, Mr. Chair, as the motion says, this bill is being laid over. I'm happy to work with you. If you have some ideas, we can sit down and talk about it.
Representative McDonald.
Good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Just lastly, then, Mr. Chair, I just have to say, you know, this is a big issue and it's not the Energy Committee. I understand that. But the organization that's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change does conclude that there is very limited and no scientific evidence whatsoever linking human-caused climate change to increasing purportedly in extreme weather. Matter of fact, according to the IPCC data, if there's any trend at all in extreme weather, it's a downward rather than upward trend. Our most extreme weather, be it a heat wave, drought, food, hurricane, or tornado, occurred many, many years ago, long before any carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere began to climb at the present rate. And that's the data from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, very reputable organization. So I just have to share that with the committee and with the office. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was wondering if I could ask Mr. Valancourt a few questions if he's still on.
Yes, he is. Go ahead, Representative Hertaus.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Valancourt, I've heard you testify that there's not a lack of work, that you certainly have a labor issue in terms of being able to do the work. There are obviously maybe some supply chain issues as well. But with regard to some of those comments that you made, are you finding that these increased costs are driving up the very costs of the types of energy efficiencies that we're talking about?
Mr. Valancourt.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and representatives. Yeah, the entire supply chain when it comes to materials and labor, yeah, it's everything adds to price. If you want to be moved to, if you have a catastrophic failure in your home, hopefully the material is available to resolve whatever issue you may have. So people that are contemplating doing, upgrades are, it's kind of like the stock market. They're hedging their bets and saying, if they have a failure or something they know is going to fail, they're putting the material on order and waiting sometimes weeks for the material to show up, because if your heat plant fails, you may have to take what's in stock versus what your actual choice may be for that, whatever that material is.
Representative Hertaus.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Valancourt. I guess, I'm no stranger to HVAC systems and, what their cost is and what needs to be done in terms of energy efficiency. I just had a recent failure of a system myself in one of the properties that I own. And yes, the manufacturers do have rebates already available for energy efficiency. There's a 4-star systems. I noticed that the energy providers, particularly electric companies, many of them are offering setback stats and smart Wi-Fi stats to be able to manage your systems, and they're providing them for free if you will do them and be able to get a reduction on your energy rate for being able to do such. But I think, Mr. Chair, what troubles me most, what we continue to hear, is the cost of doing business in Minnesota. And this ends up being a driver of cost to do business, whether it's proposals like 6 weeks paid leave, or whether there are other costs of doing business that make it more onerous in terms of the tax rates that we charge businesses and the way we disrespect our businesses and our job creators. Here we're talking about $37 million
in the first year as a fiscal note. Think about what $37 million might do to make the cost of doing business less expensive in Minnesota. That's where we should be directing our energies toward in terms of energy savings. It's kind of amazing that we have this anti-competitive structure in Minnesota in terms of growing or expanding or doing business in Minnesota. And yet we hire or we appropriate money to deed to be able to run around like a candy store and pass out grants and incentives to come and do business in Minnesota. I mean, that's just is counterproductive. It's kind of like the discussion we had about sales tax on tickets, you know? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So, you know, I'm just really frustrated by this whole idea of offering rebates and incentives to do business here in Minnesota. Like I mentioned, you know, Deed is handing out millions of dollars. We find it necessary to pick winners and losers as to who's going to get a discount to keep their business going. We didn't see that happen during the housing crisis when everything collapsed in 2008. Oh, we saw HVAC and insulating contractors get rebates to keep their businesses going, but nothing to incent people to keep the whole construction industry. And Mr. Chair, I've learned over the years here that the construction industry is accountable, all things considered, whether it's realtors' fees, whether it's mortgage origination, whether it's the different inputs into the housing industry and good paying jobs for the people that work in it, that about 1/6 of the state's revenues are the result of construction related activities. It's a very important industry. And while it may seem sensible to be offering rebates to people who can afford to upgrade their systems, this is the wrong approach. We should be doing everything to making the cost of putting in those systems much less, and you'd find more people able to go forward with making improvements, because the market right now, you know, I saw $4.89 for diesel yesterday on the way home from the Capitol. I mean, we're being incented to change our behavior in and of itself. Propane was under $2 a gallon last year. Now it's up over $4 a gallon. People are heating their homes with propane, have every incentive to tighten things up. So, I mean, the market forces right now are incenting you to do that. If we would just make it a little bit cheaper to do business, we wouldn't have to charge $12,000 for an HVA system. Maybe we could put it in for $9 or $10. So this is a complicated problem, but we're just throwing Band-Aids on it. We ought to be doing everything we can do to make Minnesota competitive with the other 50 states together. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Joaquin.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, may I just make a response to that?
Sure. Really briefly? You bet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Representative Hertaus was talking about the cost of this tax credit. And what about the cost to our states that we incur year after year with disasters? With the flood last year the drought last year, and the amount that we need to pay out to farmers to help them. And do they deserve that help? Yes, they do. And we deserve people who are flooded and are dealing with the extreme weather events and our response to that. And so the cost to our state to not do anything is huge. We can't continue to kick this down the road and not do anything. We are seeing our climate change. We are seeing the environment around us change. They are talking that in just a few years, Minnesota will no longer be hospitable to our state bird balloon, to our tree, the red pine, to walleye. And so as we continue to ignore the science about climate change, we will continue to, our state will continue to change. And so Mr. Chair, I think that's to ignore the cost that we are already paying is not appropriate.
Chair Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And I just want to bring us a little bit back to the bill. I appreciate the latitude you give people, Chair Marquardt, about in committee to discuss other subjects, but I think we've gone kind of far afield with some of the questions to the author around climate change and construction materials and the like. I just want to thank Representative Akam for bringing this bill forward. I do appreciate you getting a chance to let folks help make their homes more energy efficient, because it does save them money in the long run, just like it does for businesses when they make theirs more energy efficient. I was happy with Senator Senjan to get a bill passed last year that allows energy improvements onto commercial buildings and multi-unit housing to make it easier for those folks to upgrade to become more energy efficient. And I think having individuals be on that same playing field is a good idea. I will ask you too, as Chair Marquardt asked her other author, if it's scalable. We're getting to that time now. I know you've worked hard on this, but maybe if you can answer that, and it sounds like you're willing to work with folks on reasonable suggestions. Thank you.
Representative Acom.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Joaquim, it's absolutely scalable. And yes, happy to work with folks as this is being laid over.
Mr. Chair, I didn't get to respond.
Well, Representative Hertaus, usually the author gets the last word. Otherwise, it'd be a back and forth forever. So, Representative Hertaus, but quickly, please.
Yes, thank you. I didn't say we shouldn't do anything. I don't think making business more competitive in the state and making the price of goods and services is doing nothing. Lowering the cost of doing business benefits the consumers, not just one consumer, but all of them. So I'm not talking about doing nothing. I'm talking about making it more affordable to be able to have the very things that are being advocated done in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you've been kind.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Swiecinski.
Thank you. And sorry to run back through the line here, but just a general question to the author, Representative Acom. So, you know, essentially these up to $2,000 for families that make up to $150,000. How does that work if they file separately? So let's say you essentially have two individuals that live in the same house but are not, they own the home together. Is it looked at who owns the home or who applies? How does that part work?
Representative Acom, do you want to answer that? Would you like research?
Well, I will actually turn to Mr. Clements. I think that it can only be any expenditure can only be counted once, but I'll let Mr. Clements say it in the appropriate way.
You bet. Mr. Clavin.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Swiecinski's question, yeah, if you look at line page 414 of the bill, there's language on there that addresses that situation of a married separate filing or married filing separate situation. And what would happen is that for filers that are married but filing separately, one spouse could not use the expenditures that the other spouse has used for the credit.
Representative Swiecinski, does that answer that for you?
No, I'm not, especially because it's not separate filers that are married. What if you have folks that are not married that own the home together filing separately? And so could you essentially have one person that does one part of a project and apply for grants over here to the max, and because you're doing potentially multiple projects, and then have the other person do, you know, like the insulation job. One person's replacing the furnace with their credit, one person's doing, so essentially they're getting twice the amount in the same property that would normally be given.
So very good. Mr. Clayman, two property owners that own the same place, but they're not married. They're not related.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I mean, as long as you don't use the same expenditure twice, I think in that scenario that I don't think there'd be a limit on that. So I guess, I think that would probably be allowable under the bill if somebody did, you know, a certain number of expenditures and then the other person did another, as long as it's to the homestead. That would probably be allowed.
Representative Swiecinski.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then just from looking at a clawback, so let's say you make these improvements within a year of you selling the home. So the state of Minnesota, you know, help pay for a new furnace or whatever they did. Does the state get the, you know, and the value of the home goes up, does the state get their money back or is it just kind of lost?
Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair, to Representative Swiecinski's question, there's not a clawback for a recapture provision in this bill. So once the credit's been paid out, unless there's some audit, you know, or assessment, you know, that there'd be no recapture or clawback of those amounts.
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You bet. Representative Herr.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. And I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Acomb for bringing this forward. I was working on something similar early on, and she and I talked about it. I'm really glad I wasn't able to get mine together, but I'm really glad that she was able to put this bill together. I did have a question, but I did just want to say really quickly before the question, I know that we're not debating climate and energy in here, but I just want to share really quickly that I think that when we talk about keeping energy costs down by wearing hats and coats and not turning things up, or, you know, I think that that's actually the point, is that we've built buildings, whether it's commercial or homes, that have not been energy efficient, and that this is why this type of program is really critical, because you should be able to live in your home comfortably, and that being able to upgrade your home actually allows that to happen. You know, I have a small farm in addition to my home in the city where I live, and that small farm was built at a way different time. And as we've upgraded that farm, we did include induction oven, you know, stove. We did include, you know, thermostats that were, you know, much more efficient. And because in that farmhouse that I live in, the heat in the coldest months is almost $500. My house in the city that is twice as big as that house has half the cost of that energy. So I don't want to have to put on a coat and hat and say that I'm being, you know, responsible for the energy. Actually, I'm being irresponsible by thinking keeping the heat on. I'm actually putting the Band-Aid on that situation. And so having these types of programs to incent people to be able to update their facilities to make them so that they are habitable in a way that is actually also friendly to the environment is really, really important. I do have to say that whether we agree or not on the science behind climate change, I can tell you that farmers are telling us there is climate change. I can tell you that too, because I have a farm, and what I've seen happen in the last few years is that as we warm sooner, but the ground is still frozen, all of the snow melts and my barn and my barnyard is completely flooded, and my animals have no place to go when that happens. And it also does a number on the parcel that I actually farm on so that I can grow my own fruits and vegetables. I'm not a farmer to have to see that this has never happened before, except for in the last few years, that our pattern of weather is making it so that we can't even operate normally. The ground is still frozen and the water is melting and there's nowhere for it to go. And so whether we agree or not on the climate science, the people every day who are living off of this land and trying to plant things are telling us that climate change is happening. Those living in cities where we know that the temperature is much higher and there's not enough trees, that they're telling us that the impact of what is happening in the climate is disproportionately happening and experiencing by people through health issues. And so there's just so much that whether we believe it or not, there's too much evidence for us as individuals, non-scientists, to see that climate is changing. And so I just want to thank Representative Acomb for bringing this forward. And then I did just want to ask really quickly, because I always do feel like these types of programs are amazing, but I also know that there are the people who generally get left out from being able to do that are those who maybe are homeowners from the low income areas, like, you know, Frogtown area or the East Side, who might have lower value homes, but don't have the ability to make these improvements. And maybe Representative Acomb, you and I can take this offline if it's going to take too long to answer here, but how do we make sure that everybody gets access to being able to use these credits when they have income as a limitation? So please feel free to answer that if we have time, but otherwise you and I can talk offline as well. But thank you so much for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Acomb.
Well, I thank you for all the comments and for the question. And I would love to talk with you to see if there are ways that we can make it accessible to more Minnesotans. And I do also want to go back to the conversation we had early this session about what we can be doing for these similar improvements to be included in rental housing and in multi-unit housing. So to be continued.
Very good. Final comment or question, Representative McDonald.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just curious, question for the author. In your bill, I read the language, but I didn't quite catch if, is it apply to two pieces of property? For example, if a fella owns a business, an old building, which I certainly could retrofit this building, it's a 100-year-old historic building, put in fake ceiling tiles and bring the ceiling down lower, but it would certainly impede on the beauty of the building. So I'll just pay the consequences and keep it cold.
but to restore the integrity of a historic building. But in your bill, does it allow for two pieces of property credit? For example, I just put in a new furnace here, so I was hoping that would reduce my very expensive energy, but it's not. Is it retrofit to last year's new furnace, new equipment, new appliances? And does it apply to two different properties, a home and a business?
Mr. Klayman maybe could answer, does it go retroactive and would it person be able to apply for two properties on this credit?
Mr. Chair, to Representative McDonald's question, the effective date is for tax year 2022. So that would apply to expenditures that would qualify in tax year 2022. So it would not be retroactive to an expenditure in tax year that was in 2021. On the two properties, the credit is limited just to the taxpayer's residence, which is defined as homestead property. So it wouldn't apply to two buildings. It would pull in the duplexes and triplexes that are homesteaded, but it wouldn't apply to, say, the taxpayer's homestead and then another property that they own that's not homestead property.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
That's it. Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a real quick comment. You do allow some flexibility in the debate, and of course, that's what makes the tax committee the best committee in the legislature. That said, the author, of course, introduced the whole idea of this so-called climate change. So the dialogue was necessary in our response and questions. I don't think we went off too much on the rails, in my personal humble opinion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative McDonald. And we always, as stated before in tax committee, allow a little bit of latitude on issues somewhat related. So nothing out of order today. Absolutely. So with that, Representative Akam, final thoughts on House File 3320 as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the robust discussion today. And I would agree that Chair Markert, you run an amazing committee here in the Tax Committee. As I said, I appreciate the conversations that we've had and would be happy to continue to have them going forward. I hope that you can support the bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Representative Akam. The chair will lay over House File 3320 as amended. Representative Akam, thank you so much for bringing forward the bill, and thank you to the testifiers. Members, last bill on the agenda is House File 4577. I'm going to move House File 4577 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Members, this is kind of a bill that comes up every year dealing with public finance. The public finance gurus, as they are, I think, have this meeting together, and they come up with looking at all the laws and what could be changed, dealing with local units of government, doing bonds and certificates of indebtedness and so forth. And what this bill does is basically extends the time a city can do a bond or a certificate of indebtedness from 10 to 20 years. So I've got Mr. Magnoli here that can talk about the reasons and basically the process of what happens every year. So, Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I'm joined with Rhonda Scovey with the Dorsey Law Firm, and she'll introduce herself. I just wanted to take a second to note I'm Joe Bagnoli with Winthrop & Weinstein Law Firm on behalf of the Minnesota Institute of Public Finance. And as you suggested, Mr. Chair, this bill is sort of like the Department of Revenue's technical bill, except for public finance. The Minnesota Institute of Public Finance is a group of attorneys, financial advisors, and bankers who work in the public finance area. And over the course of the year, as they work through various issues and spot various details where the code could be clarified, where the statutes could be clarified, or little changes, and we hope to not make very big substantive changes, could be done to better accommodate current environment. We've suggested those to the legislature. I should note and I know that they contacted you, Mr. Chair. We were on a little shorter time frame this year, and so we didn't get a chance to circulate this with the League of the Association of Counties and School Boards, which we typically do, but we were able to talk with the League of Cities, and I know they support the bill. I should also note that everybody that's in the Institute of Finance, the lawyers, the bankers, financial advisors, all are either representing or working with and on behalf of their clients, which are local units of government, school boards, towns, cities. So this legislation largely is an attempt to make their public financing needs work a little more smoothly. With that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Scobie, and she can run through quickly the bill.
Very good. Ms. Scobie, please, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. Begin with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And if you could, a quick summary of the bill. I know there's not a lot of changes.
Very good. Thank you. My name is Rhonda Scobie. I'm a bond attorney with Dorsey & Whitney, and I'm here to speak in support of a public finance bill. Joe has explained how it came to this bill. It is a collaborative process with folks in the industry and cities, counties, and towns. The general rule right now for capital equipment is a 10-year limitation. The bonds are also subject to a limitation for the economic life of the equipment that's being financed. But cities and counties and other municipalities have found that certain long-lived assets like fire trucks or ambulances or solar equipment are hard to finance affordably in a short period of time. So this bill would extend the allowable period from 10 years to 20 years, and it would still be capped by the useful life of a project. So in practicality, that means if a fire truck has a 15-year economic useful life, that would be the limit instead of the statutory 20 years. So I promise to keep it brief. That is the short story, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you so much. Perfect. I think everyone understands that. So thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on House File 4577? Seeing none, members, any questions for myself or any of the testifiers? So thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Thank you, Ms. Scobie, for that information. And with that, the chair will lay over House File 4577. Thank you so much. Members, schedule for the next 2 weeks here. We do have, of course, a meeting tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, and an additional meeting on Friday, which should be the last meeting that we hold bills, hearings for bills. And that Friday meeting will be from 10:30 till 12:30. We have a 2-hour slot, 10:30 to 12:30 on Friday. With the idea that the House Omnibus Tax Bill would be posted next Monday, April 4th. The bill, we go over the bill on Tuesday, April 5th, take testimony Wednesday, April 6th, and then do the markup on the bill on the 7th, Thursday, April 7th. And then I think the following next Friday, I think we're hearing the K-12 education bill taxes. So I'll kind of plan on the next couple Fridays. So that's kind of the schedule coming up. Members, thank you for the discussion today. Thank you for the work. And with that, the Tax Committee is adjourned.